This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Road 13, celebrating their ranking as the 2017 National Wine Awards of Canada number one winery in BC. They invite you to visit them on Oliver's coveted Golden Mile Bench. Road 13, it's all about the dirt. Hello, my name is Terry David Mulligan, and this is Tasting Room Radio, and this glorious Saturday. Well, I hope it's a glorious Saturday because we're talking on Thursday at the trade tasting of the 40th annual Vancouver International Wine Festival, and this is where we start. We have 2 one-hour specials coming your way, and we begin. We're going to talk to the Portuguese and the Spanish, who are the featured regions here, and rightly so, but first, some hosts and friends of the show. Harry Hershick, the executive director of the Vancouver International Wine Festival, year 40. Dana Van Mulligan, who is not only a friend, but is also the co-host of this show, as is Sandra Ofield, who's listed as media, like you can just go buy a media card. And then DJ Kearney from newdistrict.ca has joined us here, and we're going to kick this thing off right now. We always do it with Harry Hershick. Welcome to your show, Harry.
Terry, thanks. It's pretty exciting. 40 years. That means it started in 1979.
And what was the biggest hit that year?
You know, we started with just one winery, Robert Mondavi Winery, doing a component tasting in plastic cups. It's kind of evolved a little bit from that.
What was the big music hit that year? Let's just put it in proper perspective.
Van Halen?
It was Steely Dan, man.
Oh, Asia.
Well done.
Thank you. Thank you.
Very well done.
You have brought a guest. Your own guest.
I did. Paul Wagner from Napa College. Lived in Spain, knows a lot about Portugal and Spain, and he's been our keynote speaker. We brought him up here. He's speaking 14 times this week. I thought, why not a 15th time on your show?
That's just what I was going to say.
Here's Paul Wagner.
You've added a 15th time to it, Harry.
Paul, I know. Well, we didn't want to stop at 13.
What should we know, we, the casual drinker, wine fan, know about Spain and Portugal that would assist us, if not even in this room, for those of us listening out there who would like to get into Spain and Portuguese wines and ports?
So, two quick facts. One of them is that Spain is the largest grape grower in the world. So we tend to think of France and Italy as being the big wine-producing countries, but in fact, Spain has more acres of vineyards than any other country on the planet. And the second thing is the variety of wines from northwestern Spain, which is cold, rainy, and very much like northwestern BC, down to the southeast of Spain, which is an absolute desert. And so they make everything from very light, fresh, lively wines. Of course, Spain makes cava, sparkling wine, to the biggest, richest, most intensely flavored red wines, all in an area that's frankly just a little bit smaller than BC.
Mm-hmm. What? You pointed at me, Terry. No, I was in your seminar this morning, and I enjoyed it because I've been to many, many times to Portugal and Spain, but I love the way you approached it with the history because I did actually call you out before the tasting started, and I said, are you sure you really want us tasting the wines in this way? And you said, don't worry, be patient. You know, it will all work its way out.
The winemakers themselves were a little worried, but in the end, they all came up and said, no, that was a good idea.
They were good. They were good. I just have to add, though, Terry, 10 years we've been doing this show here for Wine Festival, and this is the first time we've got the best seat in the entire house.
It is the best seat.
It is.
And the mountains have cleared, and we got snow and all those things. A sidebar, Paul, if I can. For years, I had always thought and heard that the Portuguese were making these wonderful wines, except they weren't telling anybody. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Have they fixed that problem?
A little bit. One of the things that happened is some of the really big port houses, people like the Symingtons, Taylor Grahams, who have international marketing expertise, they've really bought into that. They've bought into the quality of the wines, they bought into the kinds of wines they're making, and they're helping take those wines to the rest of the world. So, absolutely, they're getting over that, and as you were at the session this morning, those were stunning wines.
All of them were. All of them.
DJ, I was just going to add that...
I have to ask DJ Kearney. Okay. Go.
I was just going to say, Paul put them in historical order. That's what created the fuss.
Did. Yes, he did.
Not
yes.
From lightest to heaviest, but from wines that were related to and made in a way 1,000, 2,000 years ago. So he started with the sherries.
From the briniest, most yeasty of all sherries, we went from there.
Would that be the tasting order as well?
Sure, why not? I mean, my theory is that people spend way too much time worrying about the sort of logistical technology of wine. It's pleasure. It's the most intimate expression of culture. You put it in your own body, and you should just go out and enjoy it. And if you have a system, use a system. If you don't have a system, just investigate and have fun.
He has a system
yeah.
for this room and this festival. Go where the lineup isn't.
There you go. I used to have a friend who said, I always go where the most attractive people are pouring wine.
DJ Kearney?
Oh, my gosh. So what resonated with me is the fact that we're sitting close to the mountains because Spain is mountainous. Mm. And that's part of the secret for me of the diversity. Mm-hmm. Right? It is a shocking country when you visit there. It's hot, but it's also very, very cold. It's the third most mountainous country in
yeah.
Europe.
Yeah. In fact, it's the highest average elevation yeah. of any country in Europe.
Yeah. yeah. And yeah, I mean, the diversity of wines from Spain and Portugal is so damn exciting. You new discoveries, every corner, every glass. There's nothing like it.
Is it a challenge to discover those wines in those ports? Like, are they going to fall into your lap, or do you have to go find them?
Oh, at the retail, at the consumer level, less and less, right? There's a lot of support for both of these countries in the liquor monopoly, in our liquor system, in retail stores. And that's a beautiful thing because a lot of the names are unpronounceable, the grapes are unknown. You just make a leap of faith. And often that starts with the price being so incredibly reasonable. I don't think there are any other countries that make such fine wines for such an amazing deal.
Well, and my theory is, what are you afraid of?
Yeah.
Open
yeah.
the bottle.
What's it going to cost
the
you?
The only rule I have about wine, open the little end of the bottle. Other than that, have fun with it. Open the wines, taste the wines. If you find something you love, fabulous. If you find something that you don't like, cool. Now you know.
Mm-hmm.
You can write him. His name is Paul Wagner. He's the co-host and color commentary of Bottle Talk with Rick and Paul. Now, Sandra Ofield is probably the only name I'm not going to butcher in this hour and next.
It's pretty easy.
Yes?
I have a new nickname for Sandra.
What is it?
After a conversation we had on the phone, Sandra Untethered.
Yes.
It used to be Sandra
it's
Winemaker.
Like a hashtag, untethered. Yeah.
yeah.
Sandra
good.
Unplugged?
Yeah, either.
Well, Sandra, this better be good.
Okay.
And you are here actually doing some media. You're asking questions, aren't you?
I am. I'm comparing some international answers to the same question with BC producers and seeing how they answer the same question differently or the same. I'm hoping it'll spark a conversation with really with the consumers here in BC to think about our industry and what we need to do to elevate it and support it and what we should be thinking of. I quite often think we think about petty things, and we need to start thinking about some pretty serious things here.
By the way, Sandra will be co-hosting, and Dan will be sitting in as well for hour two when we're going to get at it. There's going to be a table full of people, all with things to say. Now, will you, Sandra, do one thing? Do some tasting for us, and when you come back for hour two, let us know what stood out for you.
I will. I'm going to go all white today.
Okay.
Paul, I have a plan. All white with nice-looking men behind the table.
Exactly. Go to the table with the good-looking people.
Dana?
Okay, so, Harry, we're 40 years now. Yeah. You've been doing this for how long? How long have you been?
I remember the first day of my job, after a bunch of people said, Harry, don't take that job. It's a snake pit. There's been four managers in 4 years. Don't do it. And I reluctantly did it, and I thought, oh, you know, I wonder what my first day on the job is going to be like. And it was 9/11.
Oof. That was 9/11.
Yes, September 11, 2001. So I remember the very first day. It's all more or less gotten better since then. But I was already committed to the wine festival because my first year was 1987.
Yep.
After taking a few wine courses, I said, you got to go to this thing. It's the Vancouver Playhouse International Wine Festival. I don't know. I never heard of it. But it was at the Hyatt. And I found wine from Chateau Mussar from Lebanon. I thought, wow, this wine world is pretty exciting. And then I've been going ever since. And so should everyone else. And it seems that they are.
They're here.
Any tickets left? You always like to do
everything
tickets.
Everything's sold out.
Okay, fine.
Everything is sold. Is everything sold out? Every tasting?
Every tasting, well? Every seminar, every event. There's no tickets
awesome.
Left.
I have an idea.
It's
amazing.
It really is.
That's awesome.
What a testament to you, Harry, to Vancouver, to everybody's love of wine, and perhaps the theme regions.
Are you looking for surprises for New District?
I am. Today is my buying day. So tomorrow will be my tasting day and my moderation day, my seminar moderation day, but today I buy.
Is there a difference between buying and tasting?
Oh, yes. Yes, there is.
Do the standards change? What?
You know, I just have a different hat on. You know, consumers love the same wines that, experts do, right? That much I know and believe very, very deeply. But I, you know, I'm thinking much more strategically about price, about what we have and things like that. So it is. And I'm never going to forget the pleasure part, Paul, I promise you.
That's the only
and
part
And opening
that
the little end of the bottle.
That's it. That's the secret.
Now, Paul, I'm going to give you a name. Give me a thumbnail sketch of some of these guests coming up, if you would. Miguel Torres.
Oh.
Magical man whose father has really revolutionized winemaking in Spain and is an ardent, ardent defender of the earth and environmental politics.
Gloria Calel.
Don't know him.
Juan Cousin.
Don't know him.
Federico Leonard.
Don't know him. I'm doing
I know
great.
All three of them, yes. So we're good to go.
Okay.
Yes.
Can I jump in on Juan Cousine?
Sure.
Yes.
Cousine.
Cousine.
He's with Paris Balta.
Yes.
And his passion that with his family, daughters, and...
Wives.
And what? And wives.
Wives.
His parents.
Wow.
I mean, everything
that,
is...
That must
going
be an attractive
to
table.
Organic, biodynamic, and just the passion he's bringing. He's going to be on some of the seminars, but that is a must-visit table.
Paul, how about the dolphin? How about... Alvaro Palacios.
Wonderful man. Mm-hmm. He was in my seminar today and could not have been more charming. Not only that, he came up beforehand and said, I'm really worried about this. And he came up afterward and he said, you know, that was really great. I'm really happy with that. So,
what's your website?
RickandPaulWine.com.
Okay. Dan Van Mulligan is sticking around. DJ Kearney is going to taste and buy and touch and feel. Harry Hershick is going to...
Stay out of the way.
Thank you. And Sandra
Oldfield. Maybe we should go taste together right now.
And Sandra Oldfield said she's going to taste and then come back for hour two. Thank you.
That's
and
right.
You can step in anytime you want, all right?
I'll step Thank in you. Whenever you want me.
This is Tasting Room Radio. It's our 10th year. It's the 40th year of the Vancouver International Wine Festival. And yes, the wine world is here. Be right back.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Road 13, family owned and operated since 2003. Road 13 Vineyards is proud to produce a selection of some of British Columbia's most celebrated wines. Get them delivered to your door by joining their wine club at road13vineyards.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by newdistrict.ca. Did you know you can buy wine online? Just takes a few clicks for quality wine to show up at your door. Plus, newdistrict.ca offers free shipping on orders over $200 and two-day delivery in the Lower Mainland. Go to newdistrict.ca to order.
My name is Terry David Mulligan, and this is Tasting Room Radio at the 40th Annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. It's, as Dana Van Mulligan, the co-host, has told us, this is year 10 for our attendance here. And we have the best seat in the house. It's a spectacular view, and we'll put some of these photos on the website for you. Now, we're heading for a mixture of Spain and Portugal because they are the feature regions. Cristiano Van Zeller from the Douro Valley, one of the Douro boys, has been on this show a number of times, and we welcome you back.
Thank you very much, Terry. It's my 30th year.
Here?
First time 1988, can you imagine?
And you don't mind actually flying the Portuguese banner by yourself from time to time?
No, not You're at all. I'm big banner. Enough.
Yes, you are. Miguel Torres, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
And welcome to your family as well. Juan Cousine.
Cousine.
Well, there's nothing that's going to be mistaken for your wines, which are absolutely beautiful. You have a bottle of Paris Balta in front of you. It's the Brut?
Yes.
This is the Brut here?
Exactly. That's the one we have available here.
Wonderful wine family. Gloria Calel from Segura Viudas. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome.
Thank you.
So, Cristiano, when you heard that Portugal was going to be one of the feature regions along with Spain, what were your thoughts?
What excuse will I have not to go? But none. After 30 years, I remember the first time that Portugal was a feature country, 20 years ago or something like that. It took us quite a lot of effort to be able to do that.
How many wineries came that year?
There was about 70, 60. There was a lot of wineries at the time still.
And now? This year?
It's about the same, I think. think. Yeah. But it was very exciting. So to have it 20 years later, or roughly 20 years later, and be able to bring the flag again, it's a great opportunity to come back to this wonderful city that I consider my second home.
How many people do you know at this table? Have you...
I know three of you better than Miguel. I've actually interviewed your father, and I've met your sister. But I don't know that we've maybe met in passing along the way. But it's great to see everybody because I'm usually in Spain a couple times a year, at least once anyway. And I was just saying to Cristiano, last time I saw him, he lives, go figure, in the Douro, and of course has a very steep driveway, and I happened to be in a vehicle that got stuck at the bottom of his driveway. He was the only one that could figure out how to get the truck back out of the driveway, so thank goodness for that.
Gloria, what have you brought to the wine show, and what are you pouring this year?
We are pouring for Cavas. We are pouring three wines which are listed already, the Brut Rosé, the Brut Reserva, and the Reserva de Edad, with the one with the metal base, which... You know, it's like an icon in the cava business. And this year we are presenting a new product, the Gran Cuvée Reserva, which is a little bit more premium. And it's also a blend of local and international grapes. But we are bringing something a little bit new for us.
Joan, what are you pouring from all of the choices that you have?
Here we have just our Paris Balta Brut. We have as well our Blanc de Pax, that it's a white made with the same grapes as Cava, Parellada, Xerello, Macabeo. We do have one Grenache from the Penedès, named Indigena. The Grenache was imported in the Penedès in the past. And we also have 2PR, Gratavinum 2PR, from Pirat. That's a small project that my brother and me, we started in 2003.
Tell me, why did you start that project? What were you looking to do?
Well, so when you are young, you want to do things a little bit different from the place where you were born and raised. And I was born at Paris Balta, where we are have been producing wines in the Penedès and Cava for a long time. And we wanted to do something else with red wines, and we thought that Priorat was the best spot and close as well.
Miguel Torres, you spent time in Chile making wines. Was there anything, this might be a surprising question, was there anything that you learned in that new country with the new terroir that you took back with you?
Well, you know, Chile, when I went there on 2009, what I saw is that they had ancient varieties, especially the Pais variety that was almost forgotten. People were not making wine with that. And these were vines of 200 years old. And I think that we happened to put a seed so that in Chile they were recognizing more the varieties that were already there. I mean, Chile had 400 years of history of viticulture before the Cabernet Sauvignon arrived, no? So I think that, you know, being some time out of home, out of the Penedès, and coming back also gave me the perspective that we are in a beautiful land. If you come to the Penedès, it's a place with more than 2,700 years of history, the oldest wine region in Catalonia. And I came back with a lot of new energy and a lot of projects that we're doing with the appellation to change things and to improve things.
Cristiano Van Zeller from the Douro Valley, one of the Douro boys. Miguel Torres, wonderful wine family. Gloria Colel from Segura Viudas. Juan Cousinet from Paris Balta and Gratavinum. Cristiano, what did you bring to the table?
I brought Val Donna Maria Three Valleys, a wine that comes from Three Valleys in the Douro, and it has more than 20 grape varieties. We are about confusion in terms of viticulture.
You embrace confusion.
I embrace confusion. I like not to control things too much. And in the Douro, we have more than 80 different grape varieties.
Exactly.
Yeah. And
and how many can you get in one bottle, one blend?
Well, the most that we have is 41 in Quinta Val Donna Maria wine. Nice. But the very interesting thing is that now, in the last 40 years, people started planting by grape variety. And I always thought that was not a mistake, but the start of a mistake. And so nowadays, just me and a couple of other fools, are planting back all mixed. So the last small acre I planted with 12 different grape varieties and things like that. So going back to the roots, high density.
Miguel, I was going to ask you, because you mentioned this morning in the tasting that you're coming close to 150. Is that correct? When will that be?
Yeah, it's going to be in 2020, if everything goes right.
So you've got a couple of years to get all this lined up, all the partying and all the... Are you going to do a special wine?
Yes. Actually, I'm working on a wine that is made with ancestral grape varieties from the Penedès. During the past 30 years, we have been trying to recuperate some of the varieties that existed in the Penedès before the Phylloxera. And there are two of them. There's a white called Forcada and a red that is called Moneo. I think that they have great, great potential. We're already planting them as an experimental way, but the appellation is going to prove these varieties very soon in the month of April. And I think that it's a great opportunity with this wine to recover the history of the Penedès, to recover this millenary place that that has so much history and values. No?
Nice.
I hope that he invites all of us for that. Mm-hmm.
Of course, I'll invite you.
Miguel, come on.
I'm going to ask you to co-host with me for a second. I'd like to know the table's view of what do you have in common, the two countries, and what makes you unique from each other? Cristiano.
I'd like to hear them first.
John.
Well, all of us are from the Peninsula Iberica. We enjoy different climatology, but at the same time close, not, I think it's a nice diversity in a very short distance. No? Mm-hmm. In our case at Paris-Balta, we have a few singularities that the winemaking is made by two ladies, my wife, my sister-in-law. We grow everything organic, biodynamic. But each one of us has its own identity, and there is room for everybody.
Well, and three of you are also all from Penedès here, mm-hmm. and of course,
mm-hmm. within Cristiano
Cristiano is representing Portugal on his own.
Gloria, I meant, go ahead.
No, I would say that, you know, we have traditions in common.
Sure.
We have families, generations of making wines.
True.
We have the wine culture in our blood. So for us, we don't understand a meal without wine, at least me. And I think we have all those things in common that make us the future countries for wine, I think.
Miguel.
I would say that aside of going with bicycle with the brother of Joan every weekend, what I like about this table is that we all are all families. No? And I believe that the best wines today are made by families, because families can look to the long term. And to make great wines, there are no shortcuts. You know, you have to take decisions looking very much into the future. This is, for me, the best guarantee for quality. There's a family name behind.
Quick question. I'm going to get to you. Are you pouring Mia here today?
No, we are not pouring Mia this year.
Will you bring Mia to us?
I'm not sure if I have bottles here.
I'm just saying, is it going to end up becoming a wine that we will see here on our shelves?
It depends on tenders, yeah, but hopefully, yes.
It's your wine, right?
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
Common things, as everybody said, the basics, but not only we are the peninsula, Portugal and Spain have very much this family-based companies, and many generations and long, but also we share rivers, we share the Meseta, we share the south. In Priorat and the Douro, when I went to the Priorat for the first time many years ago, just the river was missing. it was funny.
It was probably dry.
Yeah, it was probably dry.
Probably dry, yeah.
Used to be a river. But,
and I remember a friend of mine, Josep Puig, asked me and said, could you bring some Touriga Nacional? So I think some of the first Touriga Nacional was taken from my vineyards to go to there. Yeah, yeah. With Josep Puig at the time. And not only that, there's all these great varieties that we share. Tempranillo, Tinta Horish, Aragonés, the same, Garnacha, Govello, Govello. We share many different... And also, in many, many cases, the friendship and relationships. We family companies tend to exchange ideas. I've known Miguel's father for... You're probably the first winery that I visited back in 1982, 81, when I started my business life. So it's all these connections are kept and in the very close way. And I'm also now invading Spain, so
yes.
I've already have some vineyards in Spain. So I'm
wonderful. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your time.
Thank you,
Tom. We have to move along now. Thank you, Dana. This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. We're at the 40th Annual Vancouver International Wine Festival, Year 10. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by NewDistrict.ca. Our friends at NewDistrict.ca have launched a wine club. Monthly six-pack selected by local wine ace DJ Kearney. Delivered right to your door. Go to NewDistrict.ca to sign up for the wine club. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. They are relaunching their wine club with either free shipping or a personal discount, depending on member location. And members get first access to their quick sellout and small production wines. Complimentary tastings for members and their guests when visiting the winery. Tasting Room Radio at the very full trade tasting, actually, Thursday afternoon for the 40th Annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. This is Tasting Room Radio. You can find all of the details of all of our guests and the links to them and nice photos at tastingroomradio.com. Federico Leonard, who is with Pinot Ricard winemakers and is pouring Campo Viejo. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
Thank you, Terry.
I love that label. Miguel Gil from Gil Family Estates.
Hola.
Welcome. And beside Michel is Natalie Bonhomme, who has decided to, how should we put this?
Bomb.
You're sitting in now for?
I'm actually here to help out a bit with Miguel to try to translate it the best way possible.
Can we also ask you a couple of questions about your wines as well?
Why not?
Of course. Fernando Elvira, the president and CEO of LVR Wines. What have you brought in front of you?
Well, a different product. It's a dry PX. It's a normal wine. It's new in the market.
Who do you know at the table?
Well, I know Federico, of course. I've traveled with him. I know Natalie very well. So I know two of the four of you, but I was sitting in the tasting this morning. So I got to taste your, and I've tasted your sherry before, your 1927, which I love, and I think it's got such great value. And I did want to ask you, though, maybe to explain to people a little bit the difference between Jerez and where you are.
Well,
besides it being north and east a little bit.
Yeah, we are different regions, that's clear. No? But in the case of Pedro Jiménez, there is no difference because mainly, certainly the total PX come always from Montilla. You are allowed to age in Jerez, but all is grown in Montilla. So PX is the grape of Montilla, and it's the grape that I use in Jerez as well in the same product.
Right. Thank you.
Fernando, are you the CEO?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Are you the CEO?
Yeah.
And are you still hands-on in the vineyard? Do you get out there? Do you need to be out there?
Yeah, I have a lot of cousins. For example, my cousin Maria, who is always traveling, and I can be in Montilla in care of the vineyard and so on.
There are more than 50 members of the family. Is that correct?
53.
Okay.
Not working in the bodega. Stockholders.
But do you ask them questions? Do you still learn? Do you want to know what their generation wants from your wines?
Well, all the knowledge I have, I have received it from my uncles. So it's a normal thing that the knowledge in the family wineries should go up and down. No? And the one who was before me is still alive, lives in Montilla as well, and I talk to him very often.
Federico Leonard from Campo Viejo. Now, Rioja, very old wine region. The Romans planted there. But I keep hearing about the new Rioja. What does that mean?
Well, I think Rioja, it's a great region in terms that it gets together what is the modern style, but also the tradition. And I think Campo Viejo tried to show this modern-day tradition. So you get a lot of new wines coming from Rioja. The Tempranillo grape, which is the signature grape of Rioja, I think it's a very versatile variety. They can produce young, fruity, easy drinking wines, and also wines that can age for decades. And I think it's very rare to find many regions around the world that you can show this ability to produce from young, fruity, easy drinking wines to wines that can age for 40, 50, 60 years.
Miguel, can you? What are you pouring? What have you brought to pour?
¿Qué has traído para?
Bueno, hemos traído el vino más emblemático de la bodega, Juan Gil. Es un vino hecho con la variedad Monastrell.
So we brought many wines today for the wine fair, but one of the most emblematic, the flagship of the winery, is really Juan Gil Monastrell, because that's where Miguel comes from.
But how many wines, I mean, are they pouring everything of the portfolio?
We're really good. We have three tables.
You've worked together before, you two.
I think we work very much together.
Not this roadshow, but you have. How many wines have you made together?
One, two, three, four.
Four different wines?
Yeah, together.
In different region.
From different region.
What did she bring to your wines?
Oh, that's a good question. ¿Qué te he traído a los vinos?
Me ha quitado prejuicio, me ha traído una visión global.
Oh,
es
great.
Muy interesante.
Then he says that I brought a global vision and took out all the how can I say that? Preconception of wines. That's what I brought.
A different conception.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good.
Yeah, pretty much.
This is good.
Yeah. Nice to hear.
I think both of you make wine that are so, they're so approachable, and yet at the same time they are extremely well made. And both of them, both of your wines have been in my top 100, I think, in the last how many years running?
Wow, thank
just
you.
Because there's great value, and there's great substance to them as well. And the Juan Gil, I mean, you make how many wines under that label, under your label?
Que dice que hemos estado siempre entre los 100 mejores de sus vinos desde siempre, que hacemos vinos muy equilibrados, muy bien hechos, y que Juan Gil, ¿cuántas botellas haces de este vino?
En torno a 300,000.
Around 300,000 bottles is made of Juan Gil.
Because there's a lot of them available in the market here, so it's really good for consumers to know and to get a chance to taste them.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you can't miss it. For the Monastrell, it's pure as it can get.
Fernando Elvillar, the president and CEO of Elvillar Wines. Miguel Gil from Gil Family Estates. Frederico Leonard, who is with Pernod Ricard winemakers. Natalie, what are you pouring here?
We're pouring rosé, we're pouring my wine Les Vins Bonhommes. We're pouring a new wine that I've got, which is called Caminos del Bonhomme as well, which is quite new from Valencia, a new project. You're welcome, of course, come and taste all the pure, the best Monastrell the Spain can bring to Vancouver.
Frederico, Canada is a very good region for Campo Viejo, yes?
Yeah, it is. It's in our top 10 markets in the world, so really, and it's growing amazingly. So I'm very happy to be back here in Vancouver in this wine show and showing our wine to all the consumers.
And how important is it? Now, I'll ask the table. How important is it to remind us that Spain is out there, that they're making these wines, that this is your art, this is your craft, this is what you give the world? Because there's lots of competition. Is it good that you come and pour and tell us these stories?
I think Spain has always been considered as cheap wine, and that is not correct. We are good wines. We are good for the value, but we are really good. I have heard this morning Álvaro Palacio saying that probably the reason that Spain was considered so that because of the bulk wine made by cooperatives. But now there are small growers all around Spain that are making very special wines, and I think we are going to have really good opportunities in the future. And here in Canada is especially.
Natalie?
Well, you know, I think it's quite common sense, okay? And I'll tell you why. Spain is getting well known by its food, nice tapas, nice destination. We are the second most traveled destination in the world this year. I don't know if you know that. And everybody comes to Spain has the same conclusion. It's all, everything is good value. It's humble, it's honest, it's good value. We have the best we can offer in terms of quality, quality expectation. So the wine, is no surprise, shows the same. So, and Miguel. So we have a selection of different grape varietals that is incredible in Spain to offer.
We have muchos terrenos y climatologías diferentes.
We have different terroirs, which is totally unusual, and many micro terroirs.
Y una combinación últimamente acerca de la tradición con la tecnología moderna.
And a good combination between technology and tradition.
Que hace que tengamos unos vinos con una relación calidad-precio, yo creo que muy superior a la media en el mundo.
So the result is, we hope, is a good relation, a quality relation price with that superior that we can offer.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You want to add?
Well, I agree with all the comments here in the table. I think pretty much they summon all the reasons that Spanish wines are living a great momentum around the world. People traveling to Spain, discovering the vibrant Spanish culture, discovering the rich gastronomy that Spain can offer, and discovering the amazing wines that Spain has produced at a great value. And as Miguel was saying, differently with other regions around the world, there's a lot of native varieties in Spain that the consumer still doesn't know and can get to discover. I think compared to other regions that can offer Chardonnay from many different places in the world, they have different expressions of the same variety, different climates, but it's still a Chardonnay they know. In Spain, you have 92 native varieties still for the consumer to discover. So I think it's a great future for Spanish wines all around the world.
Do you have to have one? Don't you have to be identified with one particular varietal?
It's hard. I mean, Tempranillo is considered the signature grape of Spain. It's grown in, I think, 28 different appellations of origins. Of course, the base is Rioja or Ribera del Duero in Campo Viejo, with most of the wines are based in Tempranillo. But you go to Jerez, if you go to the south, you have Palomino, you have own varieties. If you go to Jumilla or all the west, you have the fantastic Monastrell grape. There is many, many grapes still, I think, to discover for the Spanish consumer and for the Spanish producers, many ancient varieties that will make a comeback. And I think, in that sense, I compare to Italy. So much to offer.
Thank you. We have to talk port next. I have to leave room for port.
We need to leave room for port. We have three glasses.
I understand that. Okay. All right. Federico Leonard, who brought a gorgeous bottle of Campo Viejo, his Reserva 2013 from Rioja. Miguel Gil from Gil Family Estates. Thank you, Natalie Benon.
Thank
we
you,
may
Sarah.
See you again. We may see you for a second time. Fernando Alvear, and thank you so much for coming with your wines and coming to
Thanks
Vancouver.
To you.
Thank you. This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Oligan, and we're going to talk port right after this.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. The 2015 Reserve Pinot Noir will be released very soon. Less than 80 cases produced. Its fruit represents the best of the best of Unsworth Pinot. Details at unsworthvineyards.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Haywire and Narrative Wines. They're proudly made at Okanagan Crush Pad and are available throughout Metro Vancouver. You can find them online at OkanaganCrushPad.com.
You can tell the port people are in town because there's bottles and glasses and conversation going on, which is what happens with port, I do believe. I have found three of the very best. Starting further away from me, someone I think you know, George Ramos, the export sales manager for Taylor Fladgate. Yes?
Yes, I do.
You visited with him?
I've spent more time with his wife, actually.
Okay.
She was the one that toured me through the properties. That was a couple of years ago. That was the same time I stomped grapes. I was going to say I stomped them with David, but he was there, but he wasn't actually stomping.
I was keeping an eye on you.
Yes. Well, it was 11 o'clock at night, so...
It's because his legs are too short.
We also have two wonderful people here. Rupert Symington, the joint managing director of Symington Family Estates. No machines, all by hand.
A little mixture of the two.
Okay, fine. But you'll know them from Graham and Dow and Ware and dry farming in the Douro. And I have found David Bruce Fonseca Guimarães, the winemaker at Floodgate, the Floodgate Partnership. Welcome. What did you pour, just to start?
I've poured a beautiful old tawny port from 1968. It's been aging in our cellars for 50 years, and we've just brought it to market.
Thank you for that. Where were you in 68?
I was really knee-height to my father's legs, and living in Portugal. I was born in the city of Porto. My family's been in the port business for six generations, and my father was giving me lots of fingerfuls of port to hope that I'd follow him in his footsteps.
Well, that's what I was saying. Did you, was there, because some children, some kids growing up in a family like that, run in the opposite direction. They do not want to do what their parents are doing.
Some do. Fortunately, I didn't. And I have fond memories that when I was young, the vineyards that we have actually are over 100 kilometers away from where we live. That's the way the port trade is divided between the city of Porto and the Douro Valley. And the great memories of traveling with my father up to the vineyards when he was in town. You've got to remember, port is sold all over the world. And anybody in port trade has to travel around the world to take port. So those memories were very fond, and I just carried on.
Rupert, do we still have to explain to a new generation of wine fan and a consumer what exactly goes into the making of port and why it's so special?
I think you always have to remind people. I mean, the most common question I get is this artificially sweetened? I like to reply and said, well, you know, this is probably a more healthy drink. It's half grape juice and half wine, you know, mixed together. We only allow half the sugar to ferment into alcohol. But I think, you know, port is a complicated category. It's not just as simple as Chardonnay and Cabernet. It's a lot deeper than that. But I think it's that mystique that really has kept the category out there. It's more interesting than most other categories. But the thing I like to say, remind people more often than anything else, is that port didn't become famous because someone put it on TV. Port became famous because it was good, and it was the best wine available at the time. This is going back 200 years. And for 150 years, port was not only the favorite wine of the world, it was the best-selling wine in the world. I mean, it's a pretty good... I mean, obviously things have moved on. People have discovered how to preserve red wine artificially. And so other wines are much better. Red wines are much better than they ever were before. So port relatively doesn't present the same opportunity as it did 150 years ago. But it's still awfully good.
Can you tell me about the bottle in front of you?
So we're pouring today the Graham's 20-year-old Tawny. And a bit like David's wonderful 1968, this has spent... all its life in seasoned oak barrels. The barrel basically acts a bit like a porous vessel to allow the oxygen to get into contact with the wine. Oxygen comes in, there's evaporation. So the wine concentrates over time. It oxidizes, but unlike most red wines, which would fall apart in the barrel, this actually only gets better.
Just before we talk to George, I want to say to Rupert, did you get an email last week from Karen McNeil?
I did, yes.
Yes, Karen McNeil, the author of The Wine Bible. I was in Napa Valley with her and Stephen Spurrier and Letty Teague and Amy Wislocki from Decanter, and we were having a battle over, we were doing questions and arguing over how much a pipe actually is, a pipe of port. And Mr. Spurrier felt very strongly that it was, I think he said 44, and she actually had to come back to you and ask you via email how much it truly was, and there were three answers.
Yep, so there was a shipping pipe was 534 litres, a Douro pipe was 550 litres.
Of course.
And a lodge pipe in Silver & Cousins was 537 and a half.
And we were breaking it down into cases. So I think he thought it was 44 cases. I thought it was 61 cases.
61 is correct, okay, in terms of the 550 litres.
Mr. Spurrier.
Yeah. But anyway, so it was a great email, and I gave a terrible answer.
No, it was a good answer. Thank you.
George Ramos, the export sales manager for Taylor Fladgate, is with us. Rupert Symington, the joint managing director of Symington Family Estates. David Bruce Fonseca Guimarães, the winemaker at Floodgate, the Floodgate Partnership. George Ramos, what did you bring in front of you?
I went the total opposite direction as the previous two colleagues. I went with a vintage port, 2003 vintage port from Fonseca, classic vintage. Why 2003? It's a special year for me. It's a year that I moved back to Portugal. It's a perfect example of how a vintage port evolves. You can drink vintage port quite young, as it's drinking today, or you can age this wine 20, 30, 50, even 100 years. With the vintage port from Fonseca, it's a blend of the three Fonseca estates, and this wine is available in both full bottles and half bottles. So whereas tawny ports, once open, you can consume them over a period of weeks, with the vintage ports, it's quite more difficult. So we've made that the half bottles available to the market for that reason.
Nice.
David Gabriels, I have a quote from you that you believe that vines are, even old vines, have been placed very specifically for a very specific reason in a spot, exact spot on the face of the planet. Where did that thinking come from, and what convinced you?
I work with vineyards that were planted just after Phylloxera. These vineyards were planted in the first three decades of the 20th century. And our ancestors understood that the different grape varieties have got different needs. And the secret to port, the balanced port, is to place each grape variety where it is best suited, so that when you pick them and bring them together, you'll get the finest port of them all. And in our region is very mountainous, and the soils vary a lot within a very short distance. And understanding that placement is so crucial to get the best out of your wines in vineyards which are as natural as you get. You don't need to resort to irrigation or any interference if you understand where to place each grape variety to where it's suited.
Rupert, how do you approach port? Where can you start if you don't have the coin to go after some of these great bottles? Where can you start that doesn't turn you off port, that lets you get into it?
Well, I think I need to answer that question starting with where we grow. We're one of the driest regions in the world, where vines are grown without irrigation.
Sure.
And this means incredibly low yields. So your cost of fruit to start with report is incredibly high, probably around €1.20 per litre. And that's about three times higher than Bordeaux, for instance. So really what you've got is a wine that you can't really make inexpensive port. So your entry-level port is going to typically be around $15-16 a bottle and upwards from there. But in terms of, if I wanted to bring a man from Mars and introduce him to a really good bottle of port, I would probably start with a reserve ruby, something like a Graham Six Grapes or a Fonseca Vin 27, which are, you know, very honest. These wines have extraordinary concentration, extraordinary amounts of flavor, and actually the inexpensive ruby ports are not that different in terms of their production costs, but they just don't have the concentration that we're getting from our top estates. So that's where I'd start.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Last question to you, maybe to George.
Well, I mean, having traveled there and been especially with your wife, and she was the one that told me this little tidbit, and just for people to understand the work and the history and just the sheer manpower that goes into farming in the Douro, and how the terraces and the vineyards. Your wife told me that the actual terraces, if you line them up back to back, they're longer than the Great Wall of China. Is that correct? There's so many terraces?
Absolutely. It's quite unique because the Douro is a UNESCO World Heritage Site, not only because of the beauty, but the amount of work, mm-hmm. of labor that went into building the terraces. And port is one of the most natural wines one can have, because we still pick by hand. So the workers are, during the morning, during the day, picking by hand. The grapes from the day's pick is brought into traditional granite lagars that we still have at each one of the Fonseca properties. The grapes are then stomped by foot, as you had the opportunity
it's
to
do.
It's
a lot of work.
So very little addition is added to the wine, basically. So it's quite natural. Fermentation process is roughly 3 days, onto barrels, downriver the spring of the following year, to the port lodges in Villanova Gaia, where the wine will then age, be bottled, and off to market. In the case of the vintage, the Fonseca Vintage 2003, it's the most natural wine. After 2 years, it's bottled, sits in the bottle, aging 10, 20, 30, or 50 years.
Yeah, so the value is basically in the history of the wine.
It is, in fact. A lot of history at this table, too. George Ramos Fonseca, thank you so much for joining us here. Rupert Symington, Joint Managing Director of Symington Family Estates, thank you. Thank you for being here. David Bruce Fonseca Guimarães, thank you once again for bringing history to us. And thank you for the tastes.
Thank you so much.
Right.
Thank you. Enjoy the pour.
That's hour one of Tasting Room Radio at the 40th Annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. This has been incredible. We'll see you next Saturday.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Club at Crush Pad. The wines your friends are drinking. Visit OkanaganCrushPad.com to join today.